This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, May 1st, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, protesters mark International Workers' Day in cities across the U.S. and around the world. We'll go to New York, where activists call for immigrant rights and better conditions for restaurant workers. Seattle, Washington, where activists have cited FBI surveillance and much criticized police tactics. And Istanbul, Turkey, where unions and activists defied a protest ban and were met with tear gas and arrests. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Today is May Day, and worker advocates around the world held rallies and marches demanding labor and human rights. In Pakistan, less than 2 weeks ahead of much-anticipated national elections, a new leftist coalition held May Day rallies across the country. FSRN's Umar Farooq reports from Islamabad.
Supporters of the Awami Workers' Party marched through the capital, Islamabad, chanting slogans calling for global worker solidarity and commemorating Chicago's Haymarket Massacre, believed to be the genesis of May Day labor mobilizations. The Awami Workers' Party was formed last November as an alliance of three leftist parties. It's fielding dozens of candidates in the upcoming national elections, promising a stronger federal government, nationalization, land reforms, protections for organized labor and women, and an end to American drone strikes. This is a similar platform that first brought the incumbent Pakistan People's Party to power 4 decades ago. Rights groups believe there are up to 8 million people, including a large number of children, working as unpaid bonded laborers in Pakistan. The Awami Workers' Party is different from the Awami National Party, which has been subject to continued threats and attacks from Taliban militants. The Taliban has largely left the Awami Workers' Party alone. Umar Farooq, FSRN, Islamabad.
President Evo Morales says Bolivia will expel USAID, the U.S. government organization involved in economic and social development activities abroad. In a May Day rally today, Morales accused the U.S. of using USAID to undermine the Bolivian government. Earlier this month, WikiLeaks published a 2006 U.S. diplomatic cable that outlines the U.S. government's attempts, through the work of USAID, to weaken then-Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Other Central and South American countries, including Ecuador and Nicaragua, have made steps towards kicking out the U.S. agency for trying to destabilize legitimate governments. Newly released satellite images obtained by Human Rights Watch reveal more than 2,000 Nigerian homes were destroyed during a raid on militants in the northern town of Baga. Some witnesses say the military attack in mid-April left more than 200 people dead. FSRN's Samuel Okocha reports from Lagos.
Baga residents say soldiers descended on the town after Islamist militants with Boko Haram attacked a military patrol, killing a soldier. According to community leaders interviewed by Human Rights Watch, soldiers burned 2,000 homes in the fishing community. Human Rights Watch says satellite images corroborate these accounts. Nigeria's military high command says far fewer houses were burned and those fires were triggered by Boko Haram weapons. The government also said only 6 civilians died in the fighting. The Nigerian government announced Tuesday that the country's Human Rights Commission would visit the community to carry out an independent investigation. Samuel Okocha, FSRN, Lagos.
The U.S. attorney in Massachusetts says 3 men have been arrested in connection with the Boston Marathon bombing. They were scheduled to appear in court this afternoon. The men are being charged with conspiring to obstruct justice and making false statements. It does not appear they had a role in planning the attack, but aided the Tsarnaev brothers by lying and disposing of evidence in the days following the bombings. Today, President Obama nominated venture capitalist and Democratic fundraiser Tom Wheeler to head the Federal Communications Commission. Wheeler has also done work as a D.C. telecom lobbyist.
Tom is the only member of both the cable television and the wireless industry Hall of Fame. So he's like the Jim Brown of telecom, or the Bo Jackson of telecom. And that's because for more than 30 years, Tom's been at the forefront of some of the very dramatic changes that we've seen in the way we communicate and how we live our lives.
Obama also announced North Carolina Representative Mel Watt to head the Federal Housing Finance Agency, which is in charge of overseeing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The Texas Civil Rights Project filed a lawsuit against a private prison corporation today, alleging corrections officials withheld evidence of inmate deaths. FSRN's Teddy Wilson reports from College Station.
The lawsuit against Corrections Corporation of America alleges the company has been illegally withholding evidence of deaths and serious injuries in private jails and prisons. CCA is a private prison company that operates dozens of facilities in Texas and around the nation. Bob Libel, executive director of Grassroots Leadership, says the private prisons have a long history of problems.
This lawsuit highlights the fact that private prison corporations thrive when they operate under the radar and without accurate reporting to state agencies.
The lawsuit demands the closure of Dawson State Jail in Dallas, Texas, and alleges that Corrections Corporation of America is covering up the deaths of seven people. The lawsuit also alleges denial of medical care.
At the Dawson State Jail in Texas, we've seen a number of women and an infant child that have died after not receiving adequate care at a Corrections Corporation of America contracted facility.
The CCA contract to operate Dawson State Jail expires in August, and organizers have been pushing state lawmakers to close down the facility. Teddy Wilson, FSRN, Texas.
And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. Protests and demonstrations took place across the country and the world today for International Workers' Day. In Bangladesh, thousands filled the streets of Dhaka to demand labor protections after last week's deadly garment factory building collapse, which killed more than 400 people. Garment workers also rallied in Cambodia's Phnom Penh. Tens of thousands of workers in Jakarta, Indonesia, demanded better wages and conditions, including transgender activists who held signs calling for labor and LGBT rights. In a moment, we'll go to Seattle, Washington, then hear a report from Istanbul. But first, we go to New York, where activists are calling attention to rights for immigrants. We're joined by Mariano Munoz Elias. He's one of the organizers of the Immigrant Worker Tour and one of the founders of Occupy Wall Street's Immigrant Worker Justice Group. Earlier today, he joined us from Bryant Park, where actions were getting underway. Mariano Munoz Elias, welcome to FSRN.
Hi, how are you doing? Happy International Workers' Day.
Good to have you on the program. First, describe the scene around you now.
Okay, well, there's a bus here in Bryant Park. People are gathering on the west side of the park by the water fountain. That is the same spot that we picked for last year's actions. And you can see there's about a couple hundred people already here putting in some last touches for some of the props that we're going to be using today. There's the Young Workers Rally is about to begin, and the Immigrant Worker Tour is going to take off at noon. So far, so good. The weather is going to be on our side, apparently.
And that tour you're mentioning, you have several stops on the tour. A couple of them are at restaurants, of course, a big employer of immigrants, especially in New York. You're stopping at Capitol Grill, that's owned by Darden Restaurants, which also owns Red Lobster and the Olive Garden, also at a McDonald's on 42nd Street. What's the focus here?
Yeah, the focus is rights for all workers, rights for immigrant workers. This is a very important year for all immigrants and immigrant workers in general. Campaigns like the Capitol Grill campaign and the Grand Cafe campaign, they're being supported by the ROCS, the Restaurant Opportunities Coalition, a nationwide organization. The Immigrant Worker Justice Group has very close ties with several nonprofits that work directly with workers organizing inside their work centers. So today we're gonna bring the community. We're going to bring the community to these workplaces because we understand that even though these workers do not live in the community, they only work there, right? And then they live very far away in the peripheries of the city, and they have to commute long distances to make it to their work centers. So it's very hard for them to find community support where they work. That's why we're here today. That's why the Immigrant Worker Justice Tour is bringing the community to these workplaces to support our fellow workers in their struggles.
And as we noted, one of the restaurants is a McDonald's on 42nd Street. Workers have been organizing under the campaign, the Fast Food Forward campaign. They say that the average income for New York fast food workers is just about $11,000 annually. There's been a recent walkout and strike. How about these recent efforts on the issue?
Yeah, we're seeing something new. It's the first time that this has happened. I mean, everybody saw that you can never organize fast food restaurants. But they're proving them wrong. No one can make ends meet. People have to work 2-3 jobs. They have no security. There is a very unsafe working conditions, and we're proving them wrong.
The tour is making one of the last stops at Senator Chuck Schumer's office. He's one of the so-called Gang of Eight lawmakers working on an immigration reform bill in Congress. What's your message to his office?
We need to see a bill that puts basic human rights at the top of its agenda. We don't want to see a guest worker program that is practically going to create second-class workers. You know, workers that are okay to be in our cities, yet they're not okay to get all the full benefits of a human being. That's a second-class worker. These are people that live here in the city, that have families, have deep roots in the city that they live in. And they need to be respected as human beings and as workers, and they need to be given a bill full of all the benefits that any other worker deserves in a developed society like ours.
Mariano Munoz Elias is one of the organizers of the Immigrant Worker Tour taking place today in New York for May Day. He joined us on the line from Bryant Park in Manhattan. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me on today.
Protesters in Seattle are also marking May Day today with several marches and an anti-capitalist rally this evening. One of the closely watched issues in Seattle is how authorities respond to the actions. Last year on May Day, the mayor authorized an emergency proclamation after clashes erupted during the protests. An independent review of the police response found a lack of proper training and direction and police use of plainclothes officers to infiltrate protesters. It also came to light that the FBI had tracked and tailed activists from Portland who came to Seattle for the rally. That's according to statements from FBI agents filed at the U.S. District Court in Seattle. For more on today's events, we're joined by reporter Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle. Mark, where are you right now?
I am in downtown Seattle. A few blocks from Westlake Park, which was the original Occupy Seattle encampment. And there is an event happening there just getting going now. And then there are several other events going on out all throughout the day. But there's a huge police presence down here, and it started yesterday, actually. Police have been standing in front of a lot of local downtown corporate businesses. And that started yesterday. I guess the police department and the mayor wanted to send a signal that they're ready for whatever happens today. Apparently, they've been preparing for the last 5 weeks.
There are, as you said, the Seattle police said that they were going to have a large presence today. So you can see that in evidence even now where you are.
Yes. And like I said, it began yesterday. So even the day before, there were police posted right outside of major downtown businesses.
Some activists have also reported visits by FBI agents in the lead up to today's events. According to the Seattle Stranger, FBI agents showed up at people's houses, at schools, and workplaces. Are you hearing anything about this?
I have heard that story, and it has been locally published and covered by some local news. So yeah, apparently people have been being surveilled even before May Day, so because that's been going on for, you know, at least a week that I've known about, maybe longer.
Are there certain areas there that the public doesn't have access to?
No, not that I can tell. There's just police everywhere, so no matter where you go in downtown, there is a police presence, and like I said, they're obviously standing in front of windows at major downtown corporate businesses. And I haven't been over by the federal building or the appeals courthouse yet. The appeals court was the one that was damaged during last year's May Day, which led to the whole, you know, grand jury situation and questions about crowd control by the police department and an independent review. All of that took place last year, and that's why everybody is really focused on this year, just sort of waiting to see what's happening, and the police are trying to prove that they can, you know, protect downtown businesses but still allow people the right to freedom of speech. And there are a lot of folks from the Occupy movement that are involved with these events today that are hoping that, you know, there aren't just a bunch of broken windows and, you know, that kind of publicity for the day's events.
That was reporter Mark Taylor Canfield talking to us from Seattle, Washington. In Turkey, officials banned an annual May Day gathering in downtown Istanbul, but labor unions and workers defied the order and were met by riot police who fired tear gas and used water cannons in an attempt to disperse thousands of demonstrators. FSRN's Jacob Resnick reports.
More than 20,000 police from around Turkey were deployed in the streets of Istanbul, according to AP figures. Government officials ordered the heavy police presence to prevent demonstrators from marching on Taksim Square. As labor unions, opposition parties, and feminist groups converged in different parts of the city, police fired tear gas and used water cannons. Following the military coup in 1980, May Day gatherings were banned. But in 2010, the ruling AK party made May the 1st a legal holiday. For the past 3 years, large parades have passed off peacefully and brought diverse groups to mark Turkey's Labor Day. But this year was different. A controversial redevelopment in Taksim Square is replacing green space with a shopping center and a mosque. Now a construction zone, the government cited health and safety as a reason for cordoning off the square. But trade union groups remained defiant and said they would march anyway. Then, in an extraordinary move Tuesday, city authorities announced a large-scale shutdown of public transportation that frustrated marchers but also paralyzed the city. Özgür, a 35-year-old doctor who, like many protesters, declined to give his full name, arrived in Beşiktaş Square with his wife with the intent of reaching Taksim. Instead, the couple was met by a barrage of tear gas.
We wanted to celebrate, but they are not letting us celebrate peacefully or in any other way anyway. And they are not allowing us to go towards the square anyway.
While the police crackdown diverted attention away from the holiday's focus on labor, many in the streets were members of unions with concrete agendas. Aydin Erol, a 43-year-old hospital lab tech, says the health sector is being privatized at the expense of ordinary people.
Since 2003, the government's health policy has been favoring the private sector. It's serving the interests of richer people at the expense of local communities. Family health services have already been privatized as a first step.
Clashes continued through the day. Government officials said nearly 50 people were injured, including 22 police, while more than 70 were arrested. The second in command of Turkey's largest opposition party was also hospitalized for tear gas. At least one Turkish journalist was reported to have been hit by a projectile by a protester, and at least one correspondent was hit by water cannon, damaging his camera. Sheltering in a nearby park with a friend, Suzanne, a 31-year-old computer engineer and member of a feminist collective that joined the march, said the May Day events showed that democracy has its limits in Turkey.
The government really hates workers and people who are...
And women as well.
But they really hate people who are against government. But it is freedom of freedom of speech, and we have to be able to say what we think. But today, it's really, really impossible even walk on the street. So it's kind of totalitarianism, not like democracy.
Taksim Square has a particular residence for leftists in Turkey. 36 years ago, more than 30 May Day protesters were killed after unidentified gunmen fired into the square. Since then, groups have made the pilgrimage, often defying government bans, and demonstrators here say they'll continue to march on Taksim with or without official sanctions. Jacob Resnick, FSRN, Istanbul.
In Argentina, protests for International Workers' Day were scheduled in several areas, including in the city of Córdoba and the outskirts of Buenos Aires. The Argentine Workers' Central Union said it planned to march in front of the National Congress. The actions follow several tense days of protests. On Tuesday, the State Workers' Union held a strike and thousands of people marched to the Buenos Aires legislature. They're protesting the government's plans to build a civic center on land that is currently part of Buenos Aires's state psychiatric hospital for men. And they are condemning police attacks last week when law enforcement used tear gas and rubber bullets to prevent mental health workers and activists from protecting a hospital building from demolition. In the resulting clashes, at least 36 people were injured and 8 were arrested. In Buenos Aires, FSRN's Eilish O'Neill has more.
No repression, reads a sign held by the first line of marchers. They're referring to what happened last Friday when an estimated 200 to 300 police officers accompanied a group of construction workers to the border of the hospital. They arrived at 6 in the morning and started to demolish a building which was formerly used for workshops to teach patients trades. Psychologist Leonardo Paniagua has worked with many Board of the Hospital patients and psychologists, and he was present on Friday during the clashes between hospital workers and the police.
The police made a makeshift wall around the building, which the construction workers started to demolish. So hospital workers started calling the media and various social organizations.
Video posted online by the Argentine news agency Telam shows riot police forming a line and shooting rubber bullets at protesters to force them farther away from the building demolition. Among those injured in these clashes were hospital workers, patients, members of the press, and several police officers, while those arrested included both hospital workers and journalists. The government of Buenos Aires did not respond to FSRN's requests for an interview, but city officials have been quoted as saying that hospital workers threw the first stones. Gabriela Roqueta, a social worker who leads bread-making workshops for border the hospital patients, has a different interpretation.
It's already violent to get to work and encounter 300 armed policemen with guns, with shields, with helmets. I think that was the first violent act, when a private company entered a public hospital, breaking a padlock at the back of the property.
The police and construction workers were on hospital land for 10 hours, from 6 in the morning when they started the demolition until 4 in the afternoon when they finished. But Roqueta says, though the building has been destroyed, she and other activists aren't giving up the fight over the civic center.
Esas tierras fueron destinadas.
The land was designated for mental health care. It's true that mental health care needs to be transformed. We need to invest more and to build new things, like halfway houses, day hospitals, night hospitals, and we think this land should be used for that.
The government of Buenos Aires claims that it acted in accordance with judicial rulings that civic center construction can go forward. But a Buenos Aires court said Friday that the building demolition interfered with a case that is still in progress. It fined the mayor and two other city government officials $4,000 each for ignoring the court. Activists plan to continue using the courts to prevent civic center construction. They're also circulating an online petition calling for the resignation of the city's justice and security minister. Eilish O'Neill, FSRN, Buenos Aires.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration announced this week that it will make the emergency contraception pill, Plan B One Step, available without a prescription for all women 15 years or older. Some lawmakers and women's health advocates are praising the decision as a step in the right direction for reproductive rights, but others say the ruling will still deny access to the drug for the women who need it the most and are vowing to continue pushing for its availability for women of all ages. In Washington, FSRN's Alice Olstein reports.
Plan B One Step, a version of the so-called morning after pill that helps prevent pregnancy by delaying ovulation, is currently available over the counter to women ages 17 and older. A new policy the FDA unveiled Tuesday would grant access to those 15 years or older. This expands the drug's availability, but fails to comply with a federal judge's recent order that the FDA make the drug available to all women with no restrictions. Under the FDA's updated guidelines, the pill will be available on pharmacy shelves, but will come with labeling requiring the cashier to check ID to prove the purchaser is of age. Dr. Tracy Wilkinson with Physicians for Reproductive Health says the decision still makes it difficult for many women of all ages to access emergency contraception.
Right now, if you're 15, 16, 20, or 30, you have to now have an identification to get this medication. So if you're a 15-year-old and you don't drive, you don't have a license, you don't have a passport, and you have no way to prove your age, you can't get this medicine. This is going to lead to more barriers for women who need this medication, especially younger women, especially undocumented women.
Wilkinson said high school and college students may also lack IDs that include their birth date. And for those who do have the proper ID, the price of the drug can still be a problem. All contraceptives, including Plan B, must be fully covered by insurance under the Affordable Care Act. But women who can't see a doctor and get a prescription in time must pay out of pocket to get the pill over the counter.
From my study, the average cost is about $45 over the counter without insurance coverage. Having to need that much money as quickly as they would need to buy that medicine is another barrier that we have to deal with. The only way to still get it covered by insurance would be to have a prescription.
The FDA originally approved the pill in 2006, noting that it has no known long-term side effects and is both safe and effective. But until 2008, everyone had to get a prescription for it. Since Plan B is only effective within 3 days after unprotected intercourse, having to see a doctor and fill a prescription prevented many women from accessing the drug in time. Doctors and women's health advocates petitioned the agency for years to approve the pill for sale without a prescription, and it did so, but set a minimum age, first at 18, then 17 years old. In a ruling last month, Judge Edward Corman of the U.S. District Court in New York said the FDA bowed to political pressure from both the Bush and Obama administrations in maintaining these age restrictions on the pill. He called the Department of Health and Human Services' 2011 decision overruling FDA approval for all ages an election year decision and a politically motivated effort to avoid riling religious groups. He also said the agency ignored data from the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research that adolescent females can be trusted to use it safely. Professor Susan Wood at the Jacobs Institute of Women's Health at George Washington University agrees.
The dosing, the safety, the effectiveness are all the same if you're a woman of reproductive potential. So the age restriction is completely arbitrary. And there is no scientific or medical reason to have any kind of age restriction.
Wood said she's disappointed in Secretary Kathleen Sebelius for failing to listen to the medical community on this issue, and said under the department's rationale, other over-the-counter items sometimes misused by teens should also have age restrictions, such as sleeping pills, painkillers, cough syrups, and laxatives. The Obama administration is expected to announce within the next few days whether they'll appeal Judge Corman's ruling or order the FDA to revise their rules to come into compliance. Alice Olstein, Free Speech Radio News, Washington.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Jess Burns. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Alice Olstein. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Janine Etter and Carla West. We welcome your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.